From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
The legislation passed yesterday to destroy UNRWA's ability to serve Palestine refugees, but also its ability to help the Palestinian civilian population in Gaza survive, constitutes a new level in this war against the UN.
That was Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour, earlier today describing the Israeli Knesset's decision to cut ties with the UN agency UNRWA as an attack on the United Nations. Israel, however, asserts that there is overwhelming evidence connecting UNRWA with the terrorist organization Hamas. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Well, at the United Nations Security Council meeting yesterday, Iran's ambassador, Amir Saeed Aravani, accused Israel and the United States of escalating tensions in the Middle East.
The responsibility for this dangerous escalation lies squarely with the Israeli regime and certainly with those who enable it, foremost among them the United States, which remain Israeli primary and unwavering supporter in committing these grave atrocities and also paralyze this august body to fulfill the primary responsibilities.
Those comments would be laughable at any place except the United Nations in New York City. We'll get more from Texas Senator John Cornyn in just a few moments. Speaking of Israel, Carolyn Glick will join us from Israel to analyze the recent retaliatory attack by Israel on Iran. What did the Israeli Air Force achieve, and could more actions follow? Well, the election season is upon us. It's not just the presidential race, though, that we should be focusing our attention on. Control of the U.S. Senate, Congress, state legislatures, and local races like school boards. They all hang in the balance. School board elections in particular are pivotal. We've seen that in the last few years. Well, conservatives in Kansas and Nebraska are close to taking control of their state boards of education. FRC's Meg Kilgannon will unpack what this might mean in those states. And speaking of education, churches are seizing new opportunities to launch schools thanks to innovative voucher programs. Now, FRC has long championed churches being used for educational opportunities, and now, with the right governors and the right state legislatures, it's becoming a reality. Joseph Backholm will break it all down for us later on this edition of Washington Watch. And speaking of the election, all right, I told you I was going to mention it every day until the election. We've got a resource for you, and I'm going to say this again. As Americans, we have a right to vote. As a Christian, we have a responsibility to vote, and we want you to cast an informed ballot. And we have resources. We're doing all the work for you. We have a voter guide. We've got a comparison between the two parties, where they stand on the key issues. When we talk about biblical values, we've got that information for you. Simply text the word toolkit. That's one word, toolkit, to 67742, and you'll have access to all of that. In fact, in some places of the country, you can get a personalized voter guide all the way down to local elections by putting in your zip code. Again, that's toolkit to 67742. Second, election night coverage. Pray, vote, stand, election 2024. That's right. We'll have all-night election coverage. FRC is teaming up with Real Life Network for live election night coverage. Pastor Jack Hibbs and I will help you navigate the night and be prepared for the next day and beyond. Coverage begins at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the Real Life Network app and the FRC Stand Firm app. To find out more, download the app, Stand Firm app. As I mentioned, lawmakers in the Israeli Knesset voted overwhelmingly yesterday to approve two bills that essentially halt the operation of the UN Relief and Works Agency, that's UNRWA, within areas under Israeli control. Now, this comes after more and more evidence has shown how the Hamas terrorist group has infiltrated the UN agency. In fact, we've seen where the supplies intended for civilians have ended up in the hands of terrorists. Well, earlier today, the legislation was discussed at the UN meeting in New York City. And among those who expressed deep concerns about the legislation was the U.S. representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield, who made clear the Israeli humanitarian aid efforts fall short of the current administration's expectations. Now, will these latest developments further strain the relationship between the U.S. and our closest ally in the Middle East? Joining me now to discuss this and more, U.S. Senator John Cornyn of Texas, who serves on three committees, including the Select Committee on Intelligence. He's a part of the Senate leadership team as well. Senator Cornyn, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
Let me ask you your reaction to the Israeli Knesset's move to sever ties with UNRWA.
Well, I know the Biden administration says that they stand with Israel, but it seems like at almost every turn they seem to want to undermine Israel's ability to defend itself against an existential threat, and that is from the number one state sponsor of terrorism, Iran, and its proxies like Hamas. So I believe they have a right to defend themselves, and if that means excluding UNRWA from Israeli-controlled territories because they're infiltrated by Hamas, I think they have a right to do so, and think that's the right call.
If the Biden-Harris administration is concerned, and I think everyone's concerned about innocent civilians, making sure they get humanitarian relief, UNRWA has a very, very checkered past. I mean, going all the way back to George W. Bush, there were questions raised about the connections with Hamas, terrorist organizations. The United States actually has its own humanitarian arm called USAID. If the Biden-Harris administration is so concerned about humanitarian relief and they support Israel, why not temporarily use USAID as the source, since we've given UNRWA over $1 billion?
Well, the United States believes in providing humanitarian support, whether it's directly, like you said, through USAID or through UNRWA, if that's possible, and the aid will actually get to its intended target or beneficiary. But as you pointed out, it's been infiltrated by Hamas, and a lot of the aid that's been sent to the Palestinians that are collateral damage to this conflict is being diverted to support these terrorists. Look, Hamas doesn't care about the Palestinian population. If they did, they wouldn't use them as human shields. They wouldn't build tunnels underneath the Gaza's surface there, where they manufacture missiles and other weapons of war. So this is not there's no moral equivalency here between Israel and Hamas and Iran. If Israel put down its arms today, Hamas would not. If Hamas were to put down its arms today, there would be peace. And that's the way I see it.
Yeah. Senator, I agree. And Israel has made that offer many, many times. But there are obviously those who refuse to even acknowledge Israel's right to exist. I want to shift gears a little bit to domestic issues. We're in the middle of an election. I think you're very much aware of that. Texas has been a target. We had the vice president there in Houston on Friday campaigning on her number one policy of abortion. I want to talk about the media's approach to this, the legacy media and beyond. But MSNBC covered the rally that Trump had at Madison Square Garden on Sunday. And I want to play a clip of Jonathan Capehart in his comments regarding that rally. Play clip number 11.
That jamboree happening right now, you see it there on your screen, in that place is particularly chilling. Because in 1939, more than 20,000 supporters of a different fascist leader, Adolf Hitler, packed the garden for a so-called pro-America rally.
What does that type of rhetoric do to our nation and to our politics?
Well, that kind of propaganda, that disinformation effort by MSNBC is something that Vladimir Putin would be very proud of. And actually, rather than bringing Americans together, that sort of rhetoric divides us further. And after this election's over, Tony, no matter what happens, Americans, Texans are all going to have to come together because we need each other in order to be successful. These are very important issues, and increasingly it seems like the Democratic Party has become the party of extremism. You mentioned the issue of abortion. This used to be a conversation that could be had between people in good faith, but now Democrats see no reason for any restriction whatsoever on abortion rights up to and including the time the baby is actually born. That is a radical position that's shared by very, very few people in our country. But this is all they've got, is attacking President Trump. They know they lose when they're talking about the direction of the country. The country is clearly on the wrong direction, according to public opinion polls. And since Kamala Harris was a vice president during President Biden's administration and can't think of anything she would change, this is all they've got, is to attack President Trump, and they do it relentlessly.
Speaking of having conversations, the Senate often describes as the saucer of the teacup, where it cools off, it moves slow, methodical. Also, one of the top issues that Vice President Kamala Harris has said she would be for, at least as it pertains to abortion again, would be eliminating the filibuster, the longstanding rule in the Senate that builds, that moves the body toward consensus as opposed to forcing a majority view on the rest of the country. What are your, are you concerned about the future of the Senate under Democratic control?
I certainly am, and this is part of their radical agenda. They want to get their nose under the tent, so to speak, on the issue of abortion, but they also want to make the District of Columbia and the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, states, which would elect two Democratic senators each. They want to pack the Supreme Court because it won't bend to their will on so many issues that they care about, and this is their way to do that. And so we must stop them. It's just, it forces us to do something that maybe doesn't come naturally, and that is to try to find that consensus and common ground. It's hard enough to do already, but if you have strictly a majority vote, then you look at the prospect of every 2 years, depending on how the election turns out, having policies from taxes to regulation to abortion flip back and forth every 2 years. So this provides a measure of stability that served us well in this nation for our entire existence. And it's another indication of just how radical Democrats have become.
And of course, that's decided by the control of the United States Senate, separate from the presidential election. And Senator Cornyn, I would add to that, instability is how we're viewed internationally as well, where our allies can't count on us because we're back and forth like a ping pong match, election cycle after election cycle. Senator, I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to see you. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Senator John Cornyn of Texas. It really does. I've seen this firsthand internationally as I worked at USERF as the chair there, of how the international community doesn't know what to expect from one election to the next. It's so radical as we go back and forth. Your vote matters. Be sure and vote coming up next Tuesday if you've not already voted. Get the toolkit. Text toolkit to 67742. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
Let's not be discouraged. Don't lose heart. Don't lose the faith. Stand now strong, because the Lord has given us the great privilege of living in a time when our choices matter, when our lives matter, when our courage matters. So let's stand together and save this great country. God bless the United States of America.
The American Republic has a freedom like no other. It has roots in the scriptures far more than any other heritage. And if we, as followers of Jesus and conservatives, don't defend it, who will?
Neutrality is not an option. There are many Christians who believe that if we just keep our heads down, if we just don't say the wrong thing, that somehow we will come out of this unscathed. You're naive if you think that. because what they want from us is not our silence. What they want from us is our submission.
Part of the dilemma of Christianity in our generation is that we've relied a little too much on human wisdom and human reasoning, human strength, human resource, and we've relied too little on the power of God and God's ability to open doors that we can't open and do things that we couldn't even hope to begin to do.
This may not be an easy task, but we are living in a moment of challenge, but also of great opportunity. And we know, always, that we are not alone, that His Spirit empowers us and protects us, and that He can do the unimaginable. Dobbs, after all, was never supposed to happen.
Father, we thank You. You have entrusted us with this moment in history, and I pray that we would be found faithful, and that as a result of our faithfulness to You, that thousands, millions would come into the kingdom as they would experience the forgiveness of sin and the new life that is found only in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Hello, I'm Jody Heiss, president of FRC Action. Here in America, we thank God for the right to vote, and we can all agree on the importance of this upcoming election. Many of us want to support candidates who share our values, but we're not comfortable supporting the big national political organizations. Well, we have a solution for supporting candidates through FRC Action's Faith, Family, and Freedom Fund. Being a super PAC, it allows for unlimited individual and corporate donations, so we can endorse and fund campaigns for people who share our values. By giving to this fund, we're able to pull all of our contributions together and support and endorse like-minded candidates. That's how we move the needle. So let's be the best stewards possible and get the most out of our political contributions by uniting our efforts. For more information or to contribute, visit faithfamilyfreedomfund.org. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. The toolkit that's available for you to help you cast an informed ballot. You can get it by texting the word toolkit, one word, to 67742. And here's why. This November, conservatives could be poised for big wins in Kansas and Nebraska in state school board races. And I know we've got a lot of listeners in Kansas and Nebraska. All right, I hope you are prepared to vote. Now, in these two states, along with Alabama, Colorado, Michigan, Texas, and Utah, it's the voters who elect their state school board members. Now, what are the issues animating conservatives in these two states? Well, here to break all this down for us, Meg Kilgannon, Senior Fellow for Education Studies at the Family Research Council. She served in the Department of Education during the Trump administration. Meg, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
So I know everybody's focused on the presidential, but I keep repeating, look, there's more things here. We've got Senate races. We have congressional races. We have state legislative races. We have state statewide offices. We have school boards. We have state boards of education. Tell us what's happening in Kansas and Nebraska.
Yeah, there are school board races for your local school board in those states, but also your state board of education is actually an elected office in those two states. And so there are so many reasons why Christians need to go out and vote. One of the reasons that this is important at the state level is because of issues like social-emotional learning and what is your sex education curriculum? What are your standards of education regarding social studies and English language? And all of those kinds of policies are set at the state level. So who is making those policies is very important. Do they share your worldview? Are they Christians? Are they conservatives? Do they believe that parents are the fundamentally first educators of children? These are things that you want to find out, and that there are so many important issues facing our kids today, and these folks on these boards have a really meaningful impact in people's lives.
And this is not missed by the left. I was reading an AP story, an Associated Press story, and here's the first sentence, actually. At issue are familiar efforts by conservative Republicans and groups to limit what K through 12 schools can teach about racism, diversity, sexuality, and gender. You know, what if education just actually focused on education, on the core the core tools like reading, like math, like science, those things that are needed to succeed in the workforce?
Absolutely. I was looking through the websites of these two boards of education, and I have to say that it was refreshing coming from a school board, a school system that's very progressive. It was nice to see them focusing on things like workforce readiness and literacy and the ability to make math calculations. They seem to be very practical in those states, and I would say that the voters in those states had better get out and vote and make sure it stays that way, because the pressure is always to the left, and it is always very strong. So that's why the AP would bother to write an article like this about the school boards in Kansas and Nebraska, because they are only happy when liberals are in charge of children's education.
Right. I mean, we're going to talk more about this in the next segment with our colleague Joseph Backholm and what's happening with churches across the country. But ever since COVID, you know, one of the silver linings there to COVID was the fact that parents all of a sudden realized what was happening to their kids and what they were being taught, how much time was wasted, and so on and so forth. So we've seen a rise in homeschooling. We've seen a rise in private education. And then, of course, because of elections, this happens because of elections, we've had governors and state legislatures that have created voucher programs that have enabled the growth in educational choice. So this is hopeful for the future. Now, we've got some battles to fight today. But if we want to get some future leaders in the pipeline who have basic skills to succeed and have not been indoctrinated, this is where we start.
Absolutely. And to the point you're going to talk about in the next segment with Joseph, there is a ballot initiative on the ballot in Nebraska to repeal the school choice options that they currently have. So if you care about education and you're enjoying a school choice program in that state, or you want your grandchildren to be able to enjoy a school choice program in that state, you better get out and vote. There are so many things on the Nebraska ballot. I was astounded at the number of things there are to vote for in addition to the presidential race. They have a very tight Senate race there, but you can elect your University of Nebraska Board of Regents. Those are appointed in my state, but in Nebraska, you can elect them. You can elect your state Supreme Court, the State Board of Education races. You have the ballot initiative on school choice, and then the two ballot initiatives on abortion there. I mean, Christians really need to make their voices heard in these states. And the same thing in Kansas. There are your entire state legislative bodies are up in those states. They're elected in presidential years. There are ballot questions. We really need for Christians to engage in this fight, because our children are worth it.
So let me just ask you this question. You know, Meg, there are people saying, you know, I'm just so tired of the negative. I'm not really excited about my choices. Look, that's a pathetic excuse for not engaging in the process. We need to vote biblical values. That means we've got to look to see who is most closely aligned to those values. They're not going to be perfect. In some cases, you're going to have some really good choices at the state level. Nationally, maybe not so much so. But we have done the homework for you in our voter toolkit that will help you see very clear contrast. There is a contrast between the two parties and the two major candidates running for president. People, you need to vote. Meg, the future depends on Christians turning out and voting those values, because that is what will shape the future.
If you're not happy with the choices you have right now, that is more reason for you to go out and make your voice heard. It's not less of a reason. The whole way that this country is founded and can run itself is based on a government of, by, and for the people.
Right.
So people need to vote, and we must vote our values.
Right.
This isn't the time to, you know, be picky.
No.
You need to be discerning and be active.
Vote for those candidates that most closely align to biblical values. And folks, we've got that resource for you. Text toolkit to 7-4-2. Meg Kilgannon, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining
us.
All right, on the other side of the break, we'll continue our conversation about education, but how churches are getting involved. This is exciting. Don't go away. More to come.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
All right, you can get your toolkit for election, for the election coming up, so that you can cast an informed ballot. Again, text the word toolkit to 67742. That's toolkit to 67742. Also, as I mentioned earlier, be prepared because election night, we're going to have live coverage beginning at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Pray, Vote, Stand, Decision 2024. We'll be providing election night coverage from a biblical perspective. Pastor Jack Hibbs and I, along with many other guests. So you need the Stand Firm app or the Real Life Network app. And you can find it all at the App Store. With the new school year already in full swing, an Associated Press story last month highlighted a trend that many in our audience already know about, the growing number of churches who are starting Christian schools. What's fueling this groundswell? And how can your church take advantage of this opportunity? Joining me now to answer these questions, Joseph Backholm, Senior Fellow for Biblical Worldview and Strategic Engagement here at the Family Research Council. Joseph, thanks for joining me today.
Good to see you, Tony.
And I know you're off to Alaska to do a worldview workshop, so I appreciate you taking time to join us this afternoon.
That's exactly right. Now, and honestly, what we're doing here is really related to the conversation we're having now. It's exciting to see the church kind of recognizing the moment that we're in right now. And the world is changing quickly. The world of education has changed really quickly. And there's a lot of churches and pastors who are recognizing that, you know, the Great Commission, which is to go and make disciples, is a lot easier if the church superintends the 16,000 hours that children spend in a classroom between kindergarten and 12th grade. And we're seeing the consequences of what happens if we allow pagans to be the leaders and the disciplers of all of those hours. And so a lot of churches increasingly are stepping up to take charge of that.
Well, then you get pagans. When pagans are teaching and training, you get pagans. That's what happens. We send our kids off to Babylon, and we wonder why they come back as Babylonians. Let's talk about you. About 4 years ago, you came out with a publication encouraging churches to use their facilities, every church a school. But with elections and governors and state legislatures, school choice has given fuel to this effort. Explain.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we have seen states recognize. And we know there are partisan differences in the way states are being led, but many states, and now we're in the dozens of states, who have recognized that we want parents to be the guardians and the leaders and the shapers of their children's education. And they are making that decision that we should not force children to be placed in a school that teaches only secularism. All schools teach morals, all schools teach a worldview, all schools teach some form of functional religion. And we've had this idea for recent history that the government schools, the secularism of the government school, is the only religion that should be taught. And increasingly schools are saying, you know, that's a one-size-fits-all form of education that doesn't work well. Parents want to do something different, and their elected officials are making that possible by saying, hey, these are education dollars. They will be used for education, but the parents will be the ones who determine what's the best form of education for a particular child, not politicians.
Now, Joseph, I am all for the churches launching these schools or learning pods. There's different things, and I know you write about that in your publication, and folks, you can find it at tonyperkins.com. Some are concerned, as we see voucher programs grow, that as the educational establishment, which you and I both know is a very politically potent, that they will go after with their tentacles to try and somehow choke out these church schools. How can churches and religious institutions protect themselves from the long arm of the educational establishment?
Yeah, I think that's a fair concern, because we know that there are strings attached to government involvement and things, and there are better and worse ways to do school choice programs. But we also know the Supreme Court, in a variety of cases in recent years, has made it clear that just because there are religious organizations taking advantage of for example, a school choice program, does not give the government the ability to tell them this is how you must exercise their religion. So with the current makeup of the Supreme Court, their current understanding of the First Amendment, which is the historical one, there is no real risk right now of the government saying, oh, if you want to be part of the school choice program, therefore you must, you know, tell boys that they can become girls. You must deny the truth of the gospel right now. That doesn't mean there's no risk in the future. And so you're right. It's a reason why we have to remain vigilant, because there is a risk of these things. And we want to be smart about this, but we also need to recognize the emergency culturally of the current moment. And whatever it takes to get kids out of government schools where they are being formed and shaped more by, you know, drag queens than they are by people who understand the truth and care about their souls and are aware of kind of the battle between truth and lies, the better it is. So I'm kind of in a mind frame where this is an emergency. Let's get them out however we can. But we still have to maintain vigilance into the future, because we got to make sure this is done in the right way so we don't cause problems down the future.
But there's a moment here we must seize. And what it looks like 5 years, 10 years down the road, we don't know, but we know what we have right now. Kind of reminds me of when the doors of Russia opened up to the gospel in the early 90s. We didn't know how long it would be open, but it was open for a period of time. We need to seize the moment and utilize this opportunity, and churches can be at the forefront. Joseph, back home, I want to thank you for joining us today. Safe travels to Alaska.
Blessings, Tony. Thank you so much.
All right. And folks, you can find out more about this publication. Go to tonyperkins.com. This is a moment, and we need to seize these opportunities when we have them. They're here now. We go in with our eyes wide open, looking toward the future. But now is the moment that we can strike for educational freedom for our children. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead as we go to Israel. That's next. Don't go away.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in Him through His Word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible reading plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in Him daily.
Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/bible.
and join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
The world is hurting. Streets are filled with crime. Families are broken. Sin is celebrated and God is mocked. Everywhere we look, the wages of our sin are on full display. As Christians, we know that surrender to God's will is the solution to our biggest problems, but not everyone agrees. Even in church, we hear people say the most important thing is to be tolerant, that we shouldn't impose a morality on other people, and that loving our neighbor means celebrating what they do. But you can't do that. It's not that you don't love your neighbor, you do. But you care about God's opinion more than your neighbor's opinion, and this makes you different. In fact, sometimes it makes you feel alone, like you're the only one. But there is good news. You are not alone, not even close. Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these SageCons yourself, go to frc.org/SageCon and take the quiz to find out. The world is hurting, and we have the solution. We can't do it alone, but we can do it if we work together. That's what we're working toward every day. Join us. Go to frc.org/SageCon. SageCon to learn more. That's SageCon. SageCon to learn more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. 1 week away until the election. I hope if you've not already voted that you are planning to vote and you will cast an informed ballot. And we want to help you do that. We have a voter toolkit available. I've been mentioning this every day, and I'm going to continue to mention up until Election Day so that you'll have access to it. Simply text the word toolkit to 67742. That's toolkit to 67742. What you'll have access to at your fingertips, two-party platform comparisons, Democratic Party, Republican Party, the candidates, the presidential candidates, some of the senatorial candidates, as well as, in many parts of the country, a personalized voter guide based upon your zip code all the way down to some of the local races. So text the word toolkit to 67742. Our word for today comes from 2 Kings chapter 3, and he said, "Thus says the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. For thus says the Lord, you shall not see wind, nor shall you see rain. Yet that valley shall be filled with water, so that you, your cattle, and your animals may drink. And this is a simple matter in the sight of the Lord. He will also deliver the Moabites into your hand." Now it happened in the morning when the grain offering was offered that suddenly water came from the way of Edom, and the land was filled with water. You know, this is seen in some of the other miracles. The manifestation of the miracle was in proportion to their faith, as seen in the preparation. The amount of water was in proportion to the ditches they dug. In the next chapter, the oil the widow had to sell to pay her debts was proportional to the jars she and her son collected. True faith leads to real action, through which God brings real results. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. The United Nations Security Council held an emergency meeting yesterday following Israel's counterattack against Iran over the weekend. Russia, Algeria, and China had requested the session on the Middle East crisis after Iran's representative sent a letter to the UN Security General and members of the Security Council. Now, during the session, Iran and its allies took their shots against Israel, accusing the Jewish state of being the aggressor.
"The responsibility for this dangerous escalation lies squarely with the Israeli regime and certainly with those who enable it, foremost among them the United States, which remain Israeli primary and unwavering supporter in committing these grave atrocities.
That was Iran's representative or ambassador to the United Nations. But as the representative from the U.S. pointed out, Iran was simply gaslighting. Can anyone seriously believe that Iran is the victim? Joining me now from Israel to discuss this and other developments in the Middle East is Carolyn Glick. She is a senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of the Carolyn Glick Show on JNS. Carolyn, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much for having me on your program, Tony. It's always a pleasure to join you.
So let's talk momentarily. I want to get to the real stuff, what happened over the weekend. But what did you take away from the UN Security Council meeting suggesting that Israel is beating up on Iran and escalating the situation in the Middle East?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the only people who can take seriously what the Security Council is doing are, unfortunately, the vast majority of member nations in the UN. And that's a big problem. You have a situation where this international body that's been vested with some significant abilities to harm sovereign countries like Israel are, in fact, engaging in wanton discrimination against Israel on behalf of terrorists and terrorist regimes like Iran. So it's a despicable move. It's understandable, and it screams out for reform and cutting the wings of the UN and the UN system, because all the power that has been granted to this organization is being used openly to advance positions and policies and actions against sovereign states that are antithetical to the interests of the free world led by the United States.
Well, Carolyn, they're back again today, the United Nations, that is, the Security Council, today talking about actions that the Knesset took yesterday, two measures that were passed there that deal with UNRWA, that's the United Nations Relief Work Agency that supposed to provide humanitarian support for Palestinians in Gaza. Explain to our viewers and listeners what the Knesset did yesterday and why.
Well, the Knesset said that Israel is barred from having any contact or official contacts with UNRWA personnel inside of the country because UNRWA has been exposed. UNRWA is it's a very unique organization. The Palestinians are the only nation or group of people on Earth that have a UN agency that's just for them. And UNRWA was established with the establishment of the State of Israel, and its purpose is to eternalize the Arab conflict with Israel by keeping the Arabs of the Land of Israel, that later were called Palestinians, in a state of perpetual refugee status. And it's actually transferred from generation to generation. So over the intervening 76 years, the Palestinian is the only community in the world whose refugee population has grown rather than shrunk. And so UNRWA is only there to maintain the Arab world and the larger worlds, and particularly the Palestinian, hatred of Israel. And since October 7th of last year, what Israel discovered was that UNRWA is simply a terrorist organization. It's not a relief organization. Hamas headquarters were in UNRWA headquarters in Gaza City. Hamas's communications hub is in UNRWA's headquarters in Gaza City. UNRWA clinics, UNRWA schools, UNRWA offices are all used as weapons bases, launching pads, and places to hold hostages by Hamas and UNRWA terrorists, that is, so-called relief workers, actually engaged in the atrocities inside of Israel on October 7th. They murdered Israelis. They kidnapped Israelis. They stole the bodies of Israelis who had been murdered by the Hamas colleagues back to Gaza. And UNRWA employees have been shown to have been holding hostages since October 7th in their private residences and starving them to death and torturing them. So this is a terrorist organization. And when Israelis realize the depth of the hostility and the danger that UNRWA poses, obviously there was an outcry. The most shocking thing that we've seen is not that the UN continues to, you know, stand by their terrorist organization, their in-house terrorist organization. It's that the Biden-Harris administration has been standing by UNRWA. And in fact, there was a letter signed by Secretary of State Blinken and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin to their Israeli counterparts a week and a half ago, threatening that the United States was going to place an embargo on arms sales to Israel if the Knesset went through with its plan to pass this legislation into law, which happened today. So it's a very strange situation where you have the United States leading an international posse of states in the UN that are trying to undermine Israel's democratic processes in order to protect a terrorist organization that operates under the aegis of the United Nations.
The evidence is quite clear. You just laid out what UNRWA has been involved in. We also know that humanitarian supplies intended for the people have been found in the bunkers of the terrorists. They've been taking those supplies, using them for themselves, depriving the people of that. So if the Biden-Harris administration is concerned, and I think everyone is concerned, Israel is concerned, they're making sure relief supplies get into the Palestinian, the innocent Palestinian people who are not a part of Hamas. The United States has its own relief agency, USAID. Why could not USAID step in temporarily for a compromised United Nations entity that has been linked with terrorists?
That's an excellent question, and I think it should be posed to the Biden and Harris administration post haste. But I think, you know, it's part of a larger idea, which is that the calls by President Biden, Vice President Harris, and other senior administration officials really for the past year have been to get to a ceasefire now. A ceasefire now when Hamas, and largely due to the humanitarian aid convoys that the United States has forced Israel to accept massive quantities of on a daily basis since almost the outset of the war, Hamas is completely resupplied. And you're right, we've seen in Sinwar's bunker, the head of Hamas that was just eliminated by Israeli forces a couple of weeks ago in Gaza, that he had all of these UNRWA bags of flour and other foodstuffs right there in his luxurious bunker in the tunnels in Gaza. And so, yes, they are maintaining Hamas's regime in power. That's what they've been doing, which isn't surprising because they're inextricably linked to Hamas's terror regime. They're part of it. They are sort of the welfare department of Hamas's regime. And so, you know, if the United States wants a ceasefire now, what they want to do is preserve the situation where Hamas is the most important and powerful political force, if not military force, in Gaza. And so the real idea that the that the Netanyahu government has been putting out and wanting to implement in recent weeks is for Israel to be our forces to be distributing the humanitarian aid in order to sidestep Hamas and cause the disintegration of the remaining ties to power, the remaining control of the society in Gaza. And the United States is staunchly opposed to that. So it's all part of this U.S. mindset under the administration, the current administration, to maintain a status quo that existed on October 7th and was completely discredited by what right. The Palestinians of Gaza did to the people of Israel that day.
And so very clear what is happening here. UNRWA is bolstering Hamas. It's what's keeping them afloat by bringing this humanitarian and other supplies in that are supplying the terrorists. All right, we only have about 5 minutes left, Carolyn. I want to get to what happened over the weekend, because quite significant with the Israeli military, the IDF, the Air Force, they're striking a number of targets in Iran. What they did is took out the air defense systems. They took out some of the missile sites. This was quite significant, in not just in and of itself, but what it could prepare the way for. Talk about that.
So you're right. So in and of itself, as you said, Israel knocked out Iran's anti-aircraft batteries so that our aircraft, if we attack again, will be able to just hover over any city basically in Iran that we need to in order to attack the targets that we need to take out, whether it's oil infrastructure, whether it's nuclear infrastructure or regime targets or what have you. But that Israel will be able to operate there freely because they don't have an anti-aircraft shield. Israel also took out missile launchers. And importantly, Israel also took out the ability of Iran, at least for the next several months to a year, to continue production of ballistic missiles, because Israel destroyed factories that produce a critical component of those solid-state ballistic missiles. And without that component that Israel destroyed, they can't go forward with their production process. Finally, Israel attacked a suspected nuclear site that was located in a sort of dual-use installation that was bombed. And they also apparently attacked a part of an oil refinery, apparently also to sort of tip our hat that those can also be struck at will. So it was a very significant and very large attack on Iran.
And quite significant from a standpoint of the distance, over 1,000 miles, required mid-flight refueling from the fighter jets. But also, leading up to this, you know, Israel had to take out and has over the last several weeks radar facilities in Syria and Iraq so that they could make that flight there. So it clearly, Israel having to go on their own, the United States, the Biden-Harris administration almost tying one hand behind their back, they accomplished this. Every plane came home. This was quite significant.
It was an extraordinary raid. I mean, it was an extraordinary display of capabilities and also use of capabilities. I mean, you know, we were talking before we started this show that Israel basically kicked down the door of Iran, of Iran's house, and started walking through it and then went home. And that's basically what happened. And the door is gone now. And so I think it's very important because the United States, it may very well have been a completely different strike and hit these critical targets like the nuclear sites had it not been for the Biden administration actively, openly forbidding Israel to do such things, which is why, you know, the dimensions of the strike, the expanse of the strike, and the strategic significance of the strike are even more impressive, because the administration made very clear that they did not want Israel to take any actions that might destabilize the regime or deny it the ability to go forward with its nuclear weapons program and its oil exports. So I think these kinds of things were important that they were accomplished despite the Biden-Harris's administration's best efforts to undermine that strike ahead of time, including, you know, as you know, leaking intelligence about Israel's operational plans.
Right. I mean, not only did they knock the door down, but they've left the guard dog toothless. I mean, this is a quite significant in that if Israel has to, if they're provoked, and I can't imagine Iran wanting to take a counter strike here because they are completely vulnerable, and this could pave the way for that eventual attack on the nuclear facilities.
Look, Iran is in a tricky position because they look extremely weak. Their terrorist proxies that were supposed to be their deterrent force, they didn't even respond after Israel attacked Iran because they're decimated. And Iran itself it looks so vulnerable. Israel carried out three waves of attacks over a three-hour period in Iran all over the country, and they couldn't stop it. So they want to demonstrate that they're not a toothless tiger, and so they have every impetus to attack. I doubt they're going to do it before the U.S. elections because they don't want to harm Kamala Harris's chances at the ballot box next Tuesday.
Carolyn Glick, always great to see you, and always appreciate your insight into what is happening there in Israel and the Middle East.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to join you. Have a great day.
All right, you too. And folks, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. Get the toolkit to 67742. Until next time, I encourage you to pray, vote, and stand.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.